Good day. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail with Mark Amaru Pinkham. This program will explore the secrets behind the Knights Templar and other secret mysteries of the world today. Now here's your host, Mark Amaru Pinkham.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, the program dedicated to diving deep, uncover, and expose the truth behind the Knights Templar, the secret societies, and the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. The Guardians of the Holy Grail show was created by me to clear up many of the popular misconceptions that have been perpetrated in the mainstream media regarding the secret societies, Holy Grail mysteries, and the bloodline from Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Through this show, I hope to set the record straight with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as with testimonials from current and past members of the Initiatic Societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templar that over the centuries have been either lost or ignored. And you can learn a lot more about our Gnostic Temple organization, and you can sign up on our mailing list and receive our monthly e-news by visiting this website, www.gnostictemplars.org. And for those of you that aren't familiar, Gnostic is spelled G-N-O-S-T-I-C, Templars is T-A-M-P-L-A-R-S.org. Now, while you're there, you can sign up for our 18-lesson Gnostic Templar e-course. You can become an associate member. We have videos to watch, books to buy, a lot of reading material. So there's a lot there, and we'd really like you to visit us and see what we're up to. Maybe you'd like to participate. During today's show, if you have any questions for our guest, feel free to call on our toll-free line, which is 866-472-5795. Before we get into the show, I'd like to mention a tour I'm leaving in September 20th to the 30th. This tour, or this pilgrimage rather, will take in southern France and northern Spain. We're calling it the Black Madonna, Mary Magdalene, and Holy Grail Mysteries Pilgrimage. We believe that the majestic Languedoc region of southern France is primed right now to give up some of her ancient mysteries, some of her ancient secrets. For many thousands of years, this region has been a reliquary and a bastion for sacred artifacts and mysteries of the goddess tradition that have been interred within its gigantic terrestrial pentagram. Now, within this huge five-pointed star, legends state that there lies another Solomon's temple that's built to scale and buried. And nearby it are precious relics that may include the body of Mary Magdalene and the Holy Grail itself. Now, upon this land in ancient time, the descendants of King David ruled their great Jewish kingdom known as Septimania. And it was here that the goddess-loving Cathars and Knights Templar once observed their ablutions and performed their ancient heretical Gnostic rites. In its heyday, the Languedoc attracted goddess worshippers from all over Asia and Europe who converged there to celebrate the mysteries of alchemy, gnosis, and the divine feminine. So we believe that the goddess is now calling her children back to the Languedoc to assist in her restoration and to help receive some of her most ancient wisdom and relics. The secrets that are there will eventually, we believe, lay the foundation for the new era of 2012, the coming age of light. During our pilgrimage, we're going to visit some very important goddess sites, Rennes-le-Château, Mont-Ségur, Sainte-Marie-de-la-Mer, where Mary Magdalene and some of the other disciples of Jesus landed on the coast of France, Montserrat in northern Spain, famous as a bastion of Grail mysteries, where some of the ancient Templar initiations took place, and where there's a very powerful Black Madonna there today. During our pilgrimage, we're going to have a lot of ceremonies and rituals, and which is one reason we've timed it to coincide with the fall equinox and the full moon, in order to make our rituals as powerful as possible. And there'll even be a chance to get initiation into the Gnostic spiritual warrior tradition on the fall equinox. And so it's going to be very interesting, a very exciting time to be in the Languedoc and in northern Spain. So I hope that some of you out there will be interested and want to join us. If you are interested, please visit this website, www.sacredsitesjourneys.com. And there's a whole itinerary there, and you can register for this really amazing pilgrimage. And don't wait, because I think it's quite a popular one, and it could actually fill up fast. Okay, so today's show, we're going to be discussing the secret teachings and history of ancient Egypt with one of the directors of the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism. I happen to know our guest quite well, as it turns out. She's my wife, Andrea McConaughey Pinkham. And she's a person who, she's a Knight Templar in our Gnostic Templar tradition. And she's also a pilgrimage leader. She's been leading pilgrimages to Egypt constantly, actually, since the year 2000. In 2004, Andrea met and began her studies with her Egyptian teacher, Abdel Hakim Aiwan, who was a wisdom keeper in the indigenous oral tradition of ancient Egypt, which was known as the Land of Kemet. Now, Hakim passed away in August of 2008, but his teachings have been preserved by Andrea and the Aiwan family, and those teachings are now being disseminated through the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism. Now, for information on this Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism, you can visit its website, which is www.egyptianinitiations.com. You kind of run it together as one word, egyptianinitiations.com. You can also find out about Andrea's future pilgrimages to Egypt, as well as other places she's leading pilgrimages, and you can do that by visiting the website of her pilgrimage company. So visit www.sacredsitesjourneys.com. So, greetings, Andrea, and welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Well, tell me about Hakim Aiwan and the special Kemet wisdom he received from the Egyptian elders.
Thank you for the opportunity to do that, Mark. Hakim Aiwan was a really special person, and I consider myself very, very fortunate to be able to have met him, studied with him, been his friend, and actually become a part of his spiritual family. He actually was born in the little village that's at the foot of the Sphinx, Nazlat el-Saman, and he grew up there, and he actually went to school at the University of Cairo. He earned 2 degrees, one in archaeology and one in Egyptology. He spent 50 years of field work. He traveled throughout Egypt. He researched and he studied the sacred sites. He actually became a professional licensed tour guide, and he worked for 30 years as a tour guide. He led many, many people to the sacred sites in Egypt, and for those who were interested in the spiritual aspects of the site, it was a real treat to go with him. And in fact, he came out of retirement in his, I believe, late 70s, early 80s, in March of 2007, and worked with us on a tour that I operated. There were about 45 of us who counted ourselves extremely fortunate to be able to study with him. He had incredible intuition and incredible amounts of knowledge that he coordinated together. Those degrees that he got in archaeology and Egyptology gave him the groundwork to study, and actually, for instance, when he would look at the hieroglyphs on the temple walls at the various temples, he would see what he was taught when he was at the university. That made a lot of sense to him, but he knew that there was more. And he had also been taught, although they just kind of brushed over it, they didn't go into detail about it, that there were levels, actually, of meaning to the hieroglyphs that were on the walls. And depending on whether you were a lay person, just a common person visiting the parts of the temple that you could visit, which you couldn't go into the inner parts of the temple, those were reserved only for the priests and, of course, the pharaoh. So if you were able to go into those inner parts and to see the panels on the walls because of your esoteric teachings as a priest, priestess, or as the pharaoh itself, you would understand more of the levels of those teachings. And some of those teachings have been passed down, as in all cultures, through an oral tradition. They necessarily were not passed down through the papyrus that we have today in the museums that come to us through the Egyptological excavations that have been done. What we have with the oral tradition, as again with many, many cultures, are the esoteric teachings. And this is what Hakim was able to tap into. First of all, through his intuition, and then of course as he traveled throughout Egypt and he took the groups to the various sacred sites, especially those groups that were the spiritually oriented pilgrims that were going to get more out of the trip than just a regular sightseeing tour, he started meeting other wisdom keepers. He wasn't the only one, of course. There were many of them that actually they would start to recognize each other. This is what he said. There was not the special handshake. There was not the special sign of any kind. It was just an intuiting. And finally, as they talked, maybe set over their tea at the little cafes at the sites after they had led their people and given them some free time, they would start talking and they would find out that there was a lot of congruency in the different lineages of the oral tradition. So in those 30 years that he worked as a tour guide, he was actually able, please excuse me, I forgot to turn my phone off. He was actually able to intuit a lot of the esoteric meanings of the wall panels. And for instance, he came to know that, for instance, the pharaoh's name was not the name of the pharaoh necessarily. It was a title. So when you have the king list, like at Abydos, where they're all written on the walls, and there's Ramses the II, Ramses the VI, Ramses the IX, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These were titles. They were not their names. And those names meant various things. So there were many, many different levels of the teachings that he was able to impart to those of us who were able to study with him. And now, since he did pass on in August of 2008, his family, his adult sons and daughters, are carrying on these teachings, the Awiyans. On our pilgrimages that we have in Egypt, in fact, we have one coming up in the fall of this year, in October and November, His son, Yosef Awiyan, is a speaker at our conference, and also he goes out to the sacred sites with us, and he is able to reveal some of those teachings to us. He was fortunate that he was a young man, and he was able actually to go out to some of the sacred sites with his father. And his father, because he was very interested in the esoteric teachings, opened up to him and imparted some of that wisdom to him. But the really amazing part, too, and the fabulously awesome part that I'm really happy about, is that Yosef is very intuitive himself. And he actually has started intuiting other parts of the meanings of the various wall panels when we go to the sacred sites. And he is meeting some of these other indigenous wisdom keepers that knew his father. So he's continuing the lineage, and we're very, very fortunate to have him. So Hakim is living on, the teachings are living on, and that's what a lineage is about. It continues. There's much, much to be shared about the ancient Kamishan teachings, and we're very, very pleased to be able to do that. And I'm not going to reveal all of them here on the show. I bet that's what you wanted, Mark, right?
Yes, I did, of course.
Of course.
What I would like you to reveal is a little information that you've passed on to me in the past about the true purpose of the Great Pyramid, what the Sphinx really was, how really old, how really ancient these monuments are that have been passed down into the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism.
Well, yes, some of these are actually already revealed. This is not new news, so I'm happy to impart that. Let's start with the Sphinx. Egyptology says that she's about 4,000 years old, right? Traditional Egyptology. Well, if you are familiar with the work of John Anthony West, who is probably the most well-known independent lay Egyptologist, and Dr. Robert Schock, who is a professor of geology at Boston University, who I've actually organized some groups, tour groups for Egypt, Dr. Schock was asked by John Anthony West to come and study the Sphinx, because in John's looking at the Sphinx, he had a light bulb go on. He actually remembered, in studying the work of Schwaller de Lubitz, who was an Alsatian mathematician who spent 15 years studying not the Sphinx, but the sacred geometry of Luxor Temple in Luxor. It wasn't the only place he studied, so he did do some studying of the Sphinx too, but in his writings, John had noticed that he talked about water erosion versus the erosion on the Sphinx being done by sand, but he never went any further with it himself. So the light bulb went off. That made a lot of sense to John. He started studying himself about the stratigraphy there on the plateau, the Sphinx itself, how it's quite possible that there were 10,000 years ago, there was actually a different climate on the plateau. He was able to use scientific evidence to actually prove that. So he finally brought Robert Schock over, and he was able, of course, to see the water erosion. And during a couple of trips, he was finally able to get into the Sphinx enclosure with permission from the Supreme Council of Antiquities. And he determined that it was water erosion, and his estimate is that the Sphinx is at least 8,000 years old, probably much older. He actually presented this to an international gathering of his colleagues, other geologists, in the 90s, and they concurred with him, his scientific findings, that he proved to them, to their satisfaction, the scientists, that the Sphinx is that old. This actually corroborates the indigenous tradition, which says that the Sphinx is much older, actually, than 10,000 years old. And yes, the Giza Plateau, 10,000, 15, 20, 25, 30,000 years ago, scientific evidence proves that there was water there, it was very fertile, there was a lot of constant rainfall. And, of course, that is what made the erosion on the Sphinx. So Hakim taught us that the Sphinx actually is not called the Sphinx. She is actually called Tefnut. She is one of the netters, or the gods or goddesses of Egypt. that her name is associated with moisture or the spittle, the spit of Nut, Nut being the creatrix, the mother goddess. So Tefnut came from Nut, and it denotes a time of moisture. And she was carved in the image of a woman to honor the matriarchal and matrilineal society of the ancient Kemetians, the people, the pre-dynastic Egyptians that lived on the plateau 10,000 years ago and much, much longer. So that's one of the teachings that we have about the Sphinx. And again, that is not anything that is new. That is part of the information that has been given out. If you want, we can go and talk a little bit about the Great Pyramid now, Mark.
Yes, please.
Well, in 2004, on the pilgrimage that Mark mentioned, where I actually met Hakim, Mark met Hakim also, because we had a tour in which I organized, and we had four different authors. We had Mark, we had Stephen Mailer, we had David Childress, and we had Christopher Dunn. Christopher Dunn wrote The Giza Power Plant. He has a new book coming out in July about the advanced technologies of ancient Egypt. Christopher is an engineer. I won't say how old you are, Chris, but you've been an engineer for a long, long time. He's a very adult man, so he's been studying a long time the science of engineering, and he's been to Egypt many, many times, and he has studied not only the Great Pyramid, but the other different areas that show an advanced machining technique that cannot be duplicated today with the same tolerances that the engineering that we have now that's developed. It cannot be replicated today. So he and his colleagues have been blown away by this. They believe that these carvings that were done in these stones, and a lot of them are granite, rose quartz, granite, black granite, from Aswan. We're talking about on the Giza Plateau. So they were carved in Aswan, and when you go to Aswan, we actually go to the quarry where you can see the famous unfinished obelisk, which was carved out, was getting ready to be lifted out as an obelisk, but it cracked, so it was left in place. So it's really great for us to be able to see that, where we can see how these techniques actually created it. So today we can't create what these ancient people of many tens of thousands of years ago created. These pyramids are not just 4,000 and 5,000 years old. They are much, 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 much older. That is the belief, that is the teachings in the indigenous tradition in Egypt. And Christopher Dunn, in his book, The Giza Power Plant, of course I won't go through the whole thing because you need to read the book, but he sets out the theory and proves to many people, myself included, that it's quite probable that the pyramids were built way past 10,000 years ago. And they were originally built, especially the Great Pyramid, that's the one that he goes into the most, but the other pyramids, Hakim said, were also built to do the same thing in some ways that the Great Pyramid was built to do. It was a power plant. That's the name of Chris's book, The Giza Power Plant. It produced free energy for the people, or the Sesh, as they were called. There was not geopolitical boundaries in Egypt back then. There were no geopolitical boundaries that we have today in Africa, in the Middle East, and India. Hakim said that all of that area was not a separate country. They had some different traditions, of course, but they were the people. This was a time in consciousness when there was more unity consciousness. There wasn't the separation. And that's, of course, as we all know, what we are coming back to now as we're going through this great shift that's happening. So in unity consciousness, tens of thousands of years ago, these people that built the pyramid were able to do so using advanced technology, engineering feats that we cannot duplicate today. And they built this machine, our device, and it produced free energy. You know, when you go into some of the pyramids or even the later tombs, still, when you go to the Valley of the Kings on the West Bank in Luxor, for example, and you go into the tombs, the paintings on the walls are very vivid. And there are no scorch marks from torches that would have been used, perhaps, you know, to create the paintings and the art on the wall. It hasn't been taken off. It couldn't be taken off because if it was there, it would be affecting the colors. So how did they see inside those tombs? And those were much, much later than the times we're talking about. Those were in, you know, the dynastic period. We're talking about pre-dynastic. So they did produce some type of free energy, we believe. What it generated, we don't really know. We have some theories about that. And this is not a theory that Chris talks about in his books as far as what it might have generated. He just says it produced free energy. And then there was a catastrophe, an earth catastrophe, and that machine was disabled. So if you read in his book, he'll talk about that catastrophe and how it physically affected the Great Pyramid and why there are marks on the ceiling in the Grand Gallery, why there are cracks in the King's Chamber, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So as we come down through from pre-dynastic commission times when there was unity consciousness, and more than that, the unity consciousness was an offshoot of the higher level of consciousness that the commissions exhibited, experienced. This is what we're moving back to. The commissions teach that there are cycles of time, okay? And the cycle of time that we are in now is the age of Amun. Amun means the hidden. We have fallen into the darkness. And if you look at Eastern philosophy, the Hindu tradition in particular, they say that we're in the Kali Yuga, the age of darkness. It's the spiritual darkness. We've been in for a long time. As the matriarchal traditions fell by the wayside, were overpowered, were repressed by the patriarchal traditions that are running our planet now. Now the matriarchal energies, the divine feminine, is being revived. And we're coming back now to what we hope is a balance. Neither one needs to rule over the other. We all want to find that balance of the male-female within ourselves, within our planet, within our own consciousness. So the ancient commissions that built these energy devices were in what we call full-flowered consciousness. Hakim taught that there were 360 senses. Just take that in. We function with 5, maybe 6, maybe 7. 360. He actually said that there were 180, and it was the balance of the two that gave us the 360. So full-flowered consciousness, our little minds today can barely grasp what that means. I know mine can hardly take it in. But the oral tradition teaches that the ancient commissions were in full-flowered consciousness when they built these energy devices and when they carved the Sphinx and when they built some of the other temples like the Osirian in Abydos. They were able to do that. We don't know particularly how. We can only intuit. Maybe we'll be finding through our intuitions, coming into the knowledge of how to replicate these again, how to reactivate perhaps some of these devices like the Great Pyramid or maybe other pyramids so that they could actually function again. Because we're now coming into, in the commission tradition, what we call the New Dawn. The symbol of the New Dawn is based on the symbol of Keper, which is the scarab beetle that's very prominent in Egyptian symbology, the beetle. The beetle is the little insect that rolls the ball of dung across the ground and actually is the eggs are there and the new beetles are reborn out of this. So it's the whole cycle of life and death. And the life is being reborn. Our consciousness is being reborn. I think we all know that as we're going through this great shift that's happening within each of us and all of us through our planet, our galaxy, our solar system, the galaxy, what is going on with us now as we move into towards 2012, the great shift that's happening. So I don't know if we have enough time now to talk about it, but at some point maybe we can talk about some of the things that are going on with these plateau and why some of this, this hidden information might be coming out again.
Well, this seems like a bit of time as any, so why don't you talk about that for a moment?
Okay. Well, I would like to direct people to a website, richardgabriel.info, and from there is a link to another website. Richard and his wife and another man, Bill Brown, and his wife, and some other people that are associated with them, have been actually working on the Giza Plateau for quite a few years. They've been doing ground-penetrating radar scans, and they have definitely found some of the tunnels that the, of course, the Wisdom Keepers have known have been there for hundreds of years. For instance, the Cave of the Birds that Andrew Collins recently, with his wife Sue and their partner Nigel, quote, rediscovered. They went in, and they were able to go in, and now Andrew's written a book, Beneath the Pyramids, and that's part of the big information that he gives out. Well, they didn't rediscover it. They just have brought it out into the light of day, which is a very good thing. I'm glad they're doing this. But the people who live in the village, the Wisdom Keepers, they've known about these tunnels. They've known about these caves for hundreds of years. It's part of their tradition. What they were doing with them was that they weren't bringing it out into the light of day because it wasn't time. But now it's time. It's time for secrets to be released, the sacred to come out. It can still be sacred, but the knowledge and the wisdom, and this is in all traditions, not just in the Kamishan tradition, not just on the Giza Plateau, but in all traditions, it's time. Because of our shift in consciousness, because of moving back to unity consciousness, because of elevating our frequencies, everything that I've been talking about, it's time for these secrets to come out. So the synchronicities are happening. To get back to the Giza Plateau, yes, things are being discovered. Things are being brought out into the light of day. And just within the past week, if you go to the website richardgabriel.info, there's information about excavations that are going on presently by the Egyptian government, the Supreme Council of Antiquities. They are actually excavating in the day and in the night. We don't know exactly what they are bringing out. They are not revealing that. There's some footage from the link on that website where you can see a room carved into the side of the plateau that actually has bars across the entrance. It's not closed, so they took footage through the bars, and there's boxes in there. No one can prove what's in those boxes, of course. But because of an incident that happened in this village last September, where there's also photos of what was discovered by six men who have since died, the footage that they were able to shoot under the house that they lived in where they excavated, they found gold and silver relics, antiquities worth who knows how much. They found a sarcophagus. There's a photo of that on the website. That sarcophagus, we don't know where it is now. Supposedly it was sold, and this is information I'm repeating, actually, from links from this website. This sarcophagus was sold on the black market for $5 million. It's never going to see the light of day in a museum. And so who knows what else was down in that excavation that was found. It hasn't been brought out. It hasn't been revealed in a press conference by the Supreme Council of Antiquities or the Egyptian government to let the people in the world today know what is there. But the excavations are continuing. Now, the one that's continuing near in front of the Sphinx, which is an official excavation. Of course, that one was not. Just as an aside, it's believed that it was funded, of course, by people who knew what was under there and wanted that the antiquities to be brought out so that they could have them themselves. So that wasn't an official excavation. But the one in front of the Sphinx that's happening now, which there's footage of, again, they're not revealing what they're bringing out. They are... they're excavating because they're setting up what they're saying is some kind of racetrack for some kind of car race that they're going to have. So that's their reason for doing part of the excavation. So what is it that's under the plateau? Okay, we don't really know. The traditions, the oral traditions, say that these devices, the pyramid, and again, part of this is in Chris Dunn's book, and part of this is what I studied and learned from Hakim and what Yosef and I have spoken about, and actually his wife, Patricia, who is actually the co-director of our Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism and a friend of mine, who had traveled with me on several tours, went to Egypt and met her husband, Yosef. She is in the Aliyan family now, of course. So she's had a lifelong interest in Egypt and is very well read and very intuitive. So they're a really good pair to talk to about what is in these tunnels and what they were for. So one of the things that Hakim told us was that the energy that was used to produce the free energy in the Great Pyramid, the tunnels played a part in that. There are definitely natural caves and natural tunnels. The Giza Plateau is honeycombed with them, as is the whole area. Actually, if you go 5-7 miles, 10 miles out to Abu Jarab, another sacred site, Abu Sir, near Abu Jarab, Saqqara, several other sacred sites around there, there are tunnels leading from some of those to the plateau. As a young boy of 16, Hakim says he went into a tunnel at one of those sites, and he walked all day, and he came out on the Giza Plateau. So that is a firsthand experience of someone having been in those tunnels. They are vast. And, you know, in a lot of the esoteric writings, you can read that there are tunnels around the world, throughout the earth, that connect sacred sites. So there are people that say that they have teleported astrally, that they have actually been through those tunnels. You know, there's a lot of stories about that. Just get on the internet, you'll find tons of them, okay? But here's a firsthand experience of someone who's been in the tunnels. So some of the tunnels, yes, again, are natural-made tunnels, but other tunnels were built by these ancient commissions. They were built by humans. The technology, again, the advanced technology that built them, they have incredible 90-degree angles that, again, as Chris Dunn says, those tolerances today cannot be done by engineers to the same quality that the original builders had when they created these tunnels. So these tunnels, they were to channel water. They used the water in combination with the sunlight. There were entrances to the tunnels. There were holes in the earth. There were shafts, and a lot of these shafts are, you can tell, were drilled. They were carved. They're not natural. These shafts opened up into the tunnel so that the sunlight could penetrate into the water, and then there was a chemical action that took place between the sunlight and the water. If you want to understand about the different kinds of water and that type of interaction, you can read Victor Schauberger's work. Just Google him, and you'll find a lot of information about that. I'm not going to go into it here. But so this action with the sunlight and the water, the tunnels taking the water into the pyramid, under the pyramid, they were able to use part of that energy to create the free energy. And that's how we believe that these devices were powered. Now, Chris Dunn talks about in his book how there probably were some chemicals that were also used. And he has a very good point about that. I agree with his theory there, too. So it's pretty exciting to read about that in his book, The Giza Power Plant. So that's a little bit about what the Great Pyramid was about. And there were other pyramids that perhaps they created energy and they created it differently. They created it the same way. I'll just talk about one more, and that is when you go out to Dashur. There are two pyramids there that are very interesting. One's called the Red Pyramid and the other's the Bent Pyramid. We're told that the Bent Pyramid was built by the Pharaoh Seneferu. It's very interesting. Hakim taught us, of course, as I said, that the names were titles. But they had a meaning, and in this case, it meant double harmony. And isn't it interesting that the bent pyramid, the reason it's called bent, is because it is not just one angle. I don't remember the degrees of the angle. But the bottom of the angle is larger, and then it gets smaller as you go up, maybe about halfway, would you say, Mark? Halfway, two-thirds of the way you saw it?
Yes, approximately, yeah.
So it does change. And, of course, Egyptologists say that was because, they changed because they actually couldn't keep building it to the angle that they were originally going to build it. So they had to change and lessen the angle so that they could actually complete the building successfully. Well, the Wisdom Keeper tradition teaches that is not the reason at all, that it was meant to be built that way so that it would create a different resonance. When we go in to the red pyramid, you can't go into the bent pyramid, although I've heard that they're going to open it up in the fall. I'm really excited about that. I hope that's true because I've never been able to go in it yet with my groups. When we go in, for instance, to the red pyramid, which is very close to it, you can see one from the other. The red pyramid is a normal pyramid. It's the same angle from top to bottom. We go down into it, and we go into the first chamber, and when you look up at the ceiling in that chamber, you'll see what's a corbelled roof, it's called, or gable. There are, what would you call them, Mark? Steps, I suppose. They're like seven different steps in the roof. It's not just a pointed roof where it's flat all the way up. So, of course, we tone, because that's another teaching that the Wisdom Keepers, the Commissioned Wisdom Keepers, talk about how to alter our consciousness is through sound. And that's probably another whole program, so I'm not going to go into great detail about that here. Maybe you can have Joseph and Patricia back, Mark, like we talked about, and we could talk about that more when they come on your show.
Yes, certainly.
So, okay, so we go into the Red Pyramid and we tone. We come into resonance as we're toning. And what happens, actually, when we come into resonance, we're able to, quote, turn on the pyramid. What does that mean? It means that there is energy that is produced. And what happens to that energy? Well, I can tell you that the people that experience it have amazing meditational experiences. They are altered on very deep levels. Their frequency changes. They have visions. They have healings. Just amazing things happen when we come into resonance. And that resonance is produced through the sound. So Hakim taught that there was a sound for each of the pyramids that, quote, turns it on. And I remember in March 2007, when we went in to the pyramid, Hakim at that point had severe arthritis in his hips, and he could not walk down into it again any longer. It was just too painful for him. So he waited outside for us. And I know when we came out, I ran right to the bus. People were snapping pictures, taking their time. And I ran right to the bus. I was the first person back on the bus. And I asked him, so what happened? What happened? What did you sense while we were in there? And he, with tears rolling down his cheeks, he said to me, you turned it on. I felt it. And I believe that too. So for ourselves and our altering our own consciousness, those of us who were able to go in there, we felt that. Now, as far as a small group of people with a little bit of sound, if we were able to do that for ourselves, if there was some type of generator, and maybe that would be several hundred people, you could get probably, what would you say, Mark, 200, 300 people in there if we were all standing all close together, maybe in the two chambers?
It would be a warm room. But yes.
Well, it's warm anyway, but yeah, it would be crowded, but a couple hundred people. We didn't have that many at that point. That was like 45 of us. At any rate, if you had a lot of people in there and they were focused and they were used to doing it and they could hit that tone, that one tone, all the time that would bring them into resonance, something major, I believe, would happen. Or maybe there was a machine that has not been discovered that would actually do the same thing, that would, quote, turn on the energy device and would actually produce the energy. So part of what I feel that that energy did, because now you also have to remember that these pyramids were built where they were built for a reason. And again, this is another show, and there have been books upon books written about why the pyramids, and even the Sphinx, of course, were put in the place that they were put on this earth for various reasons. And quite a few of those books, of course, talk about how they were aligned with various stars and various star systems. I'm not going to go into that. But if they were put on the earth in the place they were put for a specific reason, other than to align with the stars, which I believe there's validity in those theories, if they were put there to do something with the earth energies, okay, they would be sort of like acupuncture needles tapping into the earth's energy, just like the needles do in the meridians in our body. Perhaps those energy devices were used for the same thing. You know, over the 16 years that Mark and I have been leading these sacred pilgrimages to sacred sites around the world, we've seen many of the sacred sites, and we do know that there was some connection between those sites around the world, energetically. And whether it was through the tunnels, whether it's through the Earth's ley lines, the energy lines, you know, there is the electromagnetic grid that is around our planet that we're calling now the Ascension Grid. For instance, if you take the flower of life and you lay it out over our globe, some of the intersecting points, many, many of the intersecting points in the flower of life, that sacred geometry that is so, so important to us, they are on the sacred sites around the world. Again, no accidents that the ancients all over the world who could feel the earth's energies, who lived in tune with nature, who were of elevated consciousness, they knew where to put these sacred buildings that, of course, were built in consciousness for a reason, certainly to help them with their consciousness, but also for the earth. And maybe, just maybe, all of those sites were built around the same time by people of similar consciousness, and not only for what was going on with them in those times, but because they were of such consciousness that they knew that there is no time. They could see into what we call future. It was also for what is going on our planet now, to help with the elevation of our consciousness, to help us with this incredible ride that we're on as we go through the shift that we're going on. You know, the Great Pyramid is actually lies at the center of the Earth's landmass. If you take the Earth, you take the globe, you flatten it out, put all the continents together, what is in the middle? It is the Great Pyramid. That can be no accident. There has to be a reason for that. And the other pyramids on the plateau and the pyramids that are in the surrounding area, they're actually on a Fibonacci spiral. And the end of that Fibonacci spiral, of course, is the Great Pyramid. And the energy comes into the Great Pyramid and, interestingly enough, comes down into what we call the King's Chamber, and comes into what we call the resonant box. Egyptologists, of course, are still calling it a sarcophagus because they're still stuck in saying that the pyramid was the tomb for Khufu. I think we're about to find that that's not true. One of the theories about what they have found, and I put a post on Facebook today about some of the excavations, they believe that they have found Khufu's tomb. And it's not in the pyramid. It is on the plateau in a different place. So at any rate, that white light spiral of the Fibonacci spiral comes into the King's Chamber of the pyramid. I believe that that is a point that is a stargate. an interdimensional portal. And in fact, Mark, remember when we went on our site inspection in 2000 and our land operator was so kind and generous to pay for us to go in by ourselves for a full hour?
How could I forget?
And as you were lying in the resonant box, I was sitting in the middle of the room, remember, chanting Sanskrit for a long, long time. And I remember when we came out, I felt so deeply affected by what happened to me in there. I mean, the meditation that I had, and of course I was able to lie in the resonant box too and had incredible visions. At any rate, I remember our guide immediately asked, of course, how was it, how was it, how was it? And it affected me so deeply I could really hardly talk about it. And, you know, trying to find words for something like that's almost impossible. But I think the nearest that I could come to saying was, do you remember I said this, that I feel invisible?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Because it affected me on such a deep, deep cellular level. I mean, I do believe that my frequency was changed forever, that it was changed to a different frequency. And actually, you had a pretty amazing experience, as I recall, as you were lying in the resonant box. Do you want to share that? Because it's really about it being an interdimensional portal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, right. Well, as I was lying in the sarcophagus, it felt like the bottom fell out. And just like a plane, when it opens up its bottom doors and releases its torpedoes, well, I was kind of a torpedo that got released, and I felt like I was flying through space for a while, which is, of course, very nice. We all want to do that. But I felt as free and as expansive as I ever have. And as it turns out, having done some studying, I learned that was the experience that was traditional, that they wanted an initiate to have, that they could feel that expansiveness, that they could fly through the cosmos in what they call the Ba, the spiritual body, the immortal body, and come back and have this sense that they truly are immortal. And so I guess I found out that it's true, it works. But what's exciting is that on every tour now that Andrew is leading, you get an opportunity to lie in that sarcophagus and have, or energy box, excuse me, and have your own experience. And we have just seen amazing experiences with people. I mean, just all spectrum, full spectrum, and off the charts. It's been totally amazing. And the one thing I can say consistently is the experiences all seem to be initiations into a new consciousness, a new chapter in a person's life. But it definitely initiation has occurred. So that's what I think is really one thing that's exciting about what you're doing in the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism, to give people that experience in the King's Chamber. And so my other question to you right now is, what other things are you teaching in the school, and how could I join? How could I become a student if I wanted to?
Okay, well, I will say that the reason that we named our website, and actually it's EgyptInitiations.com, EgyptInitiations.com, is that it is all about initiation, but it is not about us initiating anyone. We feel that it's this time now that we're coming back into unity consciousness, that our frequencies are elevating, that each person can get it for themselves. And, of course, that's been Mark's and my work for all the 20 years that we've been doing this work or more on our personal path, too, is the Gnostic experience, your own direct experience of the divine. You don't need a priest. You don't need a guru. You don't need Mark or Andrea. You don't need the wisdom keepers of the Awiyan family in the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism to give you any initiation. We set the stage and you initiate yourself by moving your consciousness into those higher frequencies. We are very honored, and of course we definitely want to help people do that. And that's why actually we formed the school. Hakeem, before he left the earth plane, did tell several of his children that starting a school would be a good idea. I had approached him about that. He had talked about it. If he had lived, he certainly would have been part of it. But the whole idea is the initiation is your own self-initiation. Now, on our website, we're getting ready to release or to post our online lessons. People that go to Egypt with us sometimes want to study before they go, and people that are not ready to go yet for whatever reason would like to study with us. So we're going to be having online lessons. So if you go to EgyptInitiations.com, you can actually sign up to be on our email newsletter list, and we'll be sending out a newsletter when we have those posted and ready. So if you go to the website and sign up, we'll be happy to let you know about that. We actually have several different ways that you can study with us. The first is called a study partner, where we have lessons, the introduction to kematology, information about the netters, the gods and goddesses of Egypt, information about the sacred sites that we visit, and information that actually Patricia Awian has put together in a very succinct way that is so pertinent to our time now. She calls it 2012 Spiraling into the Next Cycle. We awaken to the potentials of our emerging new dawn, our rebirth, into a magical new dimension of existence. It's putting it all together about what's happening now. We also, excuse me, we also have a group on Facebook for those of you who might be on Facebook if you want to join us, Spiraling into 2012 and Beyond, where we actually have great discussions about that. And we have our Facebook group, the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism, where we have discussions about the school and the topics in the school. So you could join those also. So the first level would be our study partner level, where you would study in those particular categories, the online lessons, which you do get a certificate for, of course, once you study. And we ask you to, for your own edification, just to make sure that you, for yourself, have really understood the information, to write a little paper and submit it to us. And these actually will at some point go in the library on our website. After you've done the online lessons, then you can become a research partner. And actually, we have quite a few people who are starting to do this now that have traveled with us several times, where you pick a topic that you want to research and then perhaps go back on a subsequent pilgrimage. And we're going to be having pilgrimages just for our research partners starting in 2011, where we'll actually go to some of the different areas that we haven't been to before on the trips that they've gone on with us. So it'll be a new pilgrimage, and we'll be sharing our research. And after that, then those people are going to also, some of them, become teachers in the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism. There is actually no fee to join. If you are interested in learning about the Kemetian teachings, you are one of us. And we would love for you to be with us. Again, if you go to the website, EgyptInitiations.com, you can sign up to receive the newsletter and become a part of the school. So we invite anyone who's interested to do that. And also, if you would like to go and study with us on site, Mark mentioned earlier, we do have a pilgrimage. We actually have a conference in Giza where we'll be having presentations by various speakers, and then we'll be going out to visit the sacred sites. Our conference and Sacred Initiatory Journey Part 1 is October 26th through 31st, and you can find information about that at sacredsitesjourneys.com or egyptinitiations.com. And then a very important part after that is the Part 2 of the Sacred Initiatory Journey. It doesn't end in just Giza. We go south to Aswan, the Temple of Isis. We come up the Nile on our Nile cruise, and we go to the Temple of Horus and Edfu. We go to the Temple of Sobek and Horus, the dual temple at Komombo. We're going to stop off at Esna to see some incredible astrological glyphs and other things there. And then we go to Luxor, where we go to Karnak Temple, and we visit the Sekhmet Chapel. Sekhmet's become one of the netters of women's re-empowerment in the modern day. There are incredible Kamishan artifacts there in Karnak Temple that we have found, and we are very thrilled to be finding this. It is much, much older, parts of it, than Egyptologists have thought before. This research that we're doing in the school is actually proving some of the oral tradition teachings, and that's what we want to do. We want some scientific proof of this, and that's what our school is doing. So at Karnak, also Luxor Temple, then we go to Dendera and also to Abydos, and one of Mark's favorite places in all of Egypt, to the Osirian, which has got to be at least 30,000 years old. So it's an incredible opportunity to elevate your consciousness for some people, in fact, many people, to go home to the roots, to enliven your cellular memory, and to bring yourself into higher states of consciousness, and then to be able to take that energy back into your life, not only to support yourself on your spiritual path yourself, but of course, that all your friends, all your family, people that you come in contact with, so that the changes that you benefit from benefit everyone, because that's what it's about. We're all in this together. We are one, and we want people to be able to have that opportunity. So, thank you very much, Mark.
Well, of course, those that are in the school, as well as everybody else, can continue their work in expanding their consciousness by going on your other sacred journeys. Can you tell me a little bit about what other sacred journeys you're offering for the next year or so?
Wow. I would love to do that. Thank you for that opportunity. I love all of the destinations that we have our pilgrimages that we lead. They're all extremely and equally important places upon the Mother Earth, I believe. So I guess I'll just do it chronologically. In late June, early July, and you can find all this information at sacredsitesjourneys.com. Ireland. I'll be going to the Emerald Isle, and I'll be taking a group there. And we'll go to the places in County Kerry and County Cork in southwestern Ireland. That's where the major, the most of the ancient sacred sites are. Many of them are clustered there together. And then we go up to Newgrange, north of Dublin, and to the Hill of Tara, two extremely important sacred sites in Ireland. And that's about a 10-day journey. In fact, I think I'm going to be in Ireland and the UK for about 6 weeks or so, because I leave there, and actually Mark and I and our Grand Prior Ian are doing our IOGT gathering, which we should invite people to, anyone that wants to learn more about the International Order of Gnostic Templars. Again, GnosticTemplars.org. You're welcome to join us July 5th through 10th in Edinburgh and at our Templar area up in northern Scotland, and we'll be having a meeting and an accolade ceremony, so people will be joining the order. Even people who want to be associate members could come, or just the general public, right, Mark? It's open to anyone.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
So after that, I am taking a group in Scotland to some of the sacred sites, July 10th through 18th, and we'll be going to places like Temple Wood Stone Circle, one of the most ancient stone circles in the British Isles, actually, and to Iona, which is it's an incredible sacred site. It's not quite as old as Temple Wood Stone Circle, but a lot of the Scottish kings were buried there. It's got incredible, powerful energies. And from there, we come back through Stirling Castle and several other castles. We want to have the castle experience in Scotland, of course. And, of course, the pièce de résistance for our Scotland tour is Roslyn Chapel outside of Edinburgh. And we'll be able to spend most of the day there. So that's one of the world's most important sacred sites in this time of the reflowering of our consciousness. It's very important to Mark and myself as Knights Templars, but it's also very important to everyone on the planet because it was built to honor the divine feminine. And the rebirth of the divine feminine that is happening on our planet now, that is a center for it, the energies of the divine feminine, and world peace, a very important place on our planet. I'll be coming home after that for a little while, and then I'm taking a group down to Peru, Mystical Journey to Machu Picchu. That's August 14th through 24th, to Cusco, Machu Picchu, the Sacred Valley of the Incas, and then down to Lake Titicaca. You know, the main energy vortex on the planet right now is the Andes in Peru. Even the Dalai Lama said that. I don't know, it's been about 10 years or so ago where he actually said that that main energy vortex had shifted from the Himalayas, which is masculine, to the Andes, which is feminine. And interestingly enough, the heart of that feminine energy is really not Machu Picchu. It's Lake Titicaca. Very, very powerful. And while we're at the lake, we go to the interdimensional stargate of Aramumu's doorway. It is a portal. It is something to be experienced where you can actually access the energies of unconditional love in a way that maybe you've never been able to do before. Now, certainly at Machu Picchu, you can access many, many different types of energies. There's the Temple of the Moon for the feminine energies. There's the Temple of the Sun for the masculine energies. There's the hitching post of the sun, which is the main energy vortex of the site, which has very, very strong cosmic consciousness connections. I could talk the rest of the day about Machu Picchu. Mark and I went there first in 93, and I've been leading tours there. Mark has too, we have, for the last 16 years. It's powerful, powerful, powerful. So I'm really happy to be taking the group back there. And then Mark has already talked about the pilgrimage to Spain and France that he'll be leading in September. Actually, co-leading that with him will not be me. It will be our dear friend, Nancy Safford, who's also a Knight Templar, and she is a High Priestess in the Magdalene Mysteries. So it's going to be a good male-female balance that you're going to get with Mark and Nancy on that particular journey. And then in October and November is our Egypt pilgrimage that I've already spoken about. So thank you, Mark, for giving me the opportunity to talk about that. And again, you can get information about those on our website at sacredsitesjourneys.com. And if you want to call us, our number is toll-free in the U.S. and parts of Canada, 888-501-3853, or our regular landline, 928-284-2384. And, of course, our email is info@sacredsitesjourneys.com.
Well, thank you so much for being on the Gardens of the Holy Grail, Andrea. We'll definitely want to have you come back on, perhaps with Yosef and Patricia, to get updates on what's happening with the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism. It's all very exciting what's happening in Egypt right now, and so we want to keep up to date, keep tabs on what's happening. So, again, thanks very much for being on.
Thank you so much, and we'll be pleased to return.
Okay, those of you that came on late to the show, I'd like to give the website address for the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism one more time so that you can visit that website and learn a lot about this school that's actually spreading information that's extremely ancient that you don't really find anyplace else. So if you have a chance, please visit this website, which is www.egyptinitiations.com. That's egyptinitiations.com. So that's our show for today, and we'll be back same time, same place next week with another exciting and eye-opening show. So in the meantime, have a wonderful week, and always remember, the true Holy Grail, the one that really counts, is right inside your own heart. So go there and find it. See you next time. Bye-bye.